Megan, I have been using our sponsor Element, that's L-M-N-T, to boost my hydration for over a month now, and I'm really loving it. I'm just not very good at drinking plain water, and I love the taste when I pop one of these little packets, I like orange or grapefruit, into a big bottle of water. It's kind of fruity and salty, and it just helps me hydrate better overall.
Element is a zero-sugar electrolyte drink mix born from the growing body of research that shows the best health outcomes occur with higher sodium levels. Each little pack delivers a significant dose of electrolytes, but minus sugar, artificial colors, and other iffy ingredients. Element's flavors are so unique, like fruity watermelon salt and spicy sweet mango chili. And we're going to set our listeners up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite.
Right. You can receive a free Element sample pack containing 8 flavors with any drink mix purchase when you purchase through our custom link, drinkelement.com/momhour. That's DRINKELMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership and is available for both new and returning customers. And if you're an Element insider, you'll have first access to Element Sparkling, a bold can of sparkling electrolyte water. Again, it's drinklmnt.com/momhour.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
And welcome to episode 363 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers here with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah.
We're really excited today. We have a fun topic that allows us to wax a bit nostalgic and hopefully bring everybody along into this very, this collective experience that is the muscle memory of motherhood. And regardless, like, don't leave us if you've got teenagers and tweens. This is as much for those of us who've been out of the little years as it is for those who are in it. And Megan, do you want to tell the little story of how this came about?
Yeah, I love this. So we met up in Texas a couple, two, three weeks ago now. And we actually had dinner with our contributor, Joanna. And afterward, we were just sitting around having a drink in the hotel lobby. And she was telling, I think, a funny potty training story.
Yeah.
I think is where it started.
We were commiserating about potty training.
And then it kind of just devolved into one of those conversations that are a lot about poop and like bodily fluids. And I just said this should be an episode because I could remember, and we'll get into it later in the show, but like a very specific sensory memory that I could remember not only how it felt, but how my body like tensed up in certain ways, or like the muscles that went into performing this motherhood act that you'll all know about when I say it later. But like, I just thought to myself, like, oh my gosh, there's so many of them and they don't ever go away. But now that I haven't had little kids for a long time, I kind of forget them sometimes until I see something or hear about something. And it's like my body just instantly goes back to that place.
Yes. Yes. I think muscle memory is the only term that accurately describes it. But in the specific Joanna potty training poop related muscle memory, we were talking about how adept, how dexterous, how good we get at certain physical things with our kids that you would never like list on a skill set. You would never be like, oh, I do this repetitive motion, you know, like repetitive stress. Like the repetitive motions of motherhood are not really something we talk about. It's just something you do over and over again. So the way that you know how far to pull that diaper tab, and like how far from the other one it needs to be until you kind of know, oh, I think we need to go up a size. Like there's all of these skills that are, I think, a combination of physical and cognitive skills that like nobody gets credit for. And it's only in retrospect that we're like, oh my gosh, that was like, I got really good at that, or really good at anticipating that movement.
Yeah. And I was actually just thinking about, there's like a particular kind of muscle soreness that I don't really think experienced since early motherhood. And for me, I bet it's different for everybody. We probably all hold tension differently in our bodies. But for me, it was like this lower back soreness that came from like crouching over the bathtub or bending down or stooping. Like I remember feeling old before my time. And that was part of it because there were certain muscle groups that were just getting used in super specific, repetitive ways over and over and over.
How about this? I'm going to paint this picture. It's not even on our list that we said we were going to talk about, but you have a baby on one hip. Let's say it's like a 9-month-old baby, not a tiny baby, not a huge toddler. And you're going to bend over to pick something up off the floor. So you like shift the baby up and slightly back, and you like pop your hip out of socket and kind of lean over like you're doing like a yoga. Can you picture what I'm saying? Like you don't bend over. You sort of like you use counterbalance with the baby and you tilt over and you get the thing. But you're so right. I have some like early dancer career lower back issues that would flare up in early motherhood because of all that improper, incorrect bending. And I don't have my lower back problems hardly at all anymore. Even though I'm many years older, my back is in much better shape. So you're right. There was definitely a crouching, bending, stooping,
side bending
situation.
Well, and when you're talking about like holding your baby on your hip, it's also like relative to your baby, because you know, your body knows how heavy your baby is. Mm-hmm. So when it's a counterbalance situation, like you've figured out how to actually counterbalance the specific weight of your baby or your toddler or your preschooler. It's like customizes over time.
Yeah. And actually that is a muscle memory in and of itself, like the weight and the feel of your own babies. Cause I've had the experience of having nieces and nephews like much later and going to pick somebody up and being like, oh, you're lighter than I expected. Or like, you're, right. And I think it's because we had this, like this sort of cellular based knowledge of the feel, the heft, the weight of our own babies. So that's what we're talking about.
The squish.
Yes. The amount of
some babies
elasticity.
Are like squishy and some are a little bit denser.
Yes.
I mean, it's so funny. And like the way your fingers sink into their little arms.
Yes.
Another thing that came into my mind when we didn't categorize them for the purposes of the show, but before when we were kind of bantering about these ideas, it's like some of these are warm fuzzies. Some of them are like danger aversion. And some of them are more in this like tenseness. There's like a conflict or a tension happening in your body that plays out in the sensation. So one that comes to mind is like, you know, the baby might wake up and maybe you're working on something. And it's like, if the baby does wake up, you feel that all over body tension because you wanted a few more minutes. But at the same time, your body responds to your baby because you actually do want to pick your baby up. It's like, there's this conflict happening at all times where it's like, I want you. No, I don't want you.
Yes.
I want you, but just go to sleep, but not here. It's so like confusing. And that just sums up basically the entire experience of motherhood.
This is a little sidebar, but do you feel like at 44, you're more in tune with like your body in general and the way your body responds to stimuli like you just described? Or did you have that awareness when you were 22 and a young mom?
I think I had the awareness, but didn't know, well, not at 22 necessarily, but I think I grew with like, as I added more kids and noticed what would bug me and what wouldn't when my kids were little, I think I developed that awareness through motherhood. I will say there was also that feeling of futility. Like, what does it matter? Like, what does it really matter if this, you know, particular thing makes me nervous or tense or anxious or stressed? Like, there's nothing I can really do about it, which is where I developed my, my really superhuman ability to zone out, which I have lost. I don't have that ability anymore. And we've talked about that. Like the ability to be in a room, interacting with your kids, but not really be there. Mm-hmm. And your voice just, Clara calls it my passive voice. Uh-huh. She's like, Mom, I can just tell when your voice goes kind of passive that you're getting stressed or tired. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. But I've lost the ability to do it the way I did when they were little. Yeah. I could float basically above the room sometimes. So it's one of those things you have to learn how to do.
Yeah.
What about you?
I don't think I'm such a cognitive person. I think about thinking a lot. I think about a lot of things, but I don't think my thinking and my feeling and my body were as connected as a younger mom as I am starting to feel them now. Like I'm just starting to notice more what a stimuli like a baby waking up, or for me, it was like coughing in the night. My whole body would tense up because we had a lot of bronchitis and a lot of pneumonias in my kids. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that was a stress response. And my body was like responding in all these different ways and in the warm, fuzzy ways too, in all of the positive ways too. I think it's mostly in retrospect that I'm recognizing that. And I wonder if today's newer moms have a little bit more language around that. I think there's been some great work, some great books and reading and podcasts that maybe in general, we're all a little bit more aware of that mind-body connection now than 10 or 15 years ago. Or maybe I'm just a slow learner.
I wouldn't be surprised if that is the case. Yeah. Sarah, we both know this time of year can be crazy. So this is a great time to get ahead with no prep, no mess meals from our sponsor, Factor. I love how these meals are ready to eat and delivered right to your door. I mean, you can't beat that convenience, but most importantly, they're seriously delicious.
Yeah, Megan, I agree. Our whole family was impressed with the quality and flavor of Factor meals we tried. And it turned out to be a great option for my teenagers when they got home late from a theater practice or came home from school super hungry. There's zero prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Factor meals just need to be heated for about 2 minutes and they're ready to go.
Yeah, and for any listeners with wellness goals this month, Factor has 6 menu preferences to support your lifestyle. Whether you're trying to boost your protein, avoiding meat, or simply focusing on well-balanced meals. And you can pause or reschedule deliveries to fit your lifestyle.
Make today the day you kickstart a new healthy routine. Head to factormeals.com/momhour50 and use code momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code momhour50 at factormeals.com/momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Okay, Megan, like many of our listeners, I'm sure I've been doing some spring cleaning in my closet lately, and it always feels so good to get rid of clothes I'm not wearing, things that don't fit or that aren't my style anymore. But you know what I realized? All of my Vionic shoes are always in the keep pile. They just tick all the boxes. They're cute, comfy, high quality. They last forever. And I love growing my Vionic collection, especially with the latest styles from their Vionic Vitals collection.
The Vionic Vitals collection offers daily wear styles designed for elegance, comfort, and versatility. We both love the Uptown Loafer, which collapses flat, so it's perfect for travel. The Chardonnay Heeled Sandal, which I know you love, Sarah. The Walk 23 Classic Sneaker, which our team member Katie gets compliments on all the time. And the Willa Slip-On Flat, one of my favorites, which comes in 12 colors for any outfit.
Yeah, I need to get the Willa Slip-On Flat. That's next on my list. Well, listeners, if you're ready to try the shoes we're always raving about, use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's one-time use only. Vionic Shoes, wearable well-being for your feet.
Okay, Sarah. So again, not doing these in any particular order, so we'll kind of jump around. But the one I want to start with is definitely baby related and pretty young babies. So this one just came to me today as I was, walking around my house thinking about this episode, and it made me smile so big. And it is the feeling of your baby's gums chewing on your knuckle. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone who's ever had a baby who likes to, most babies like to mouth things, but some babies are particularly mouthy. And some babies seem to be like teething forever. And that feeling of like, this will amuse them or this will keep them happy. And like they have really strong little jaws. Uh-huh. And the feeling of like that firm gum, that firm, like wet, sloppy gum chewing on your finger. And then how it starts to feel a little bit different when they start to get just little teeth.
Yes.
And like, they've got the little teeth bumps and like you can feel it. And then their teeth get too big to do it anymore. And then you start to know it's like, oh, nope, it's past that time.
That
you cannot chew on my knuckle. That hurts. That is just one of those visceral memories for me. And if it's your baby and it's, probably other people's babies aren't chewing on your fingers, especially in this day and age, but you even know the way they like it. Like you start to develop the ability to be like, oh, they really want to chaw harder, so I should give them a little more knuckle to work on. Or they really just kind of want to suck on it. So like, it doesn't matter. They like this knuckle better than that. It's like you can purely customize it to your particular baby. And is so cool. I love it.
I love it too. I think I even remember being, before I had my own babies, either noticing or learning that was something babies liked. And that it was, I think in my mind, it was somehow more hygienic than just letting them suck on your finger, which that's splitting hairs a bit. If you're sticking your own hand in your baby's mouth, like you're sort of accepting a level of shared germs. But thinking like your knuckle is somehow like, I don't know, like a more suitable chew toy.
You don't have fingernails. That's probably why I would do it. Like there's no nail there to either be germy or cut their little roof of their tiny little mouth.
That's a good point. It does make a good chew toy. All right. Well, what about this one? We were both pregnant multiple times. So my first muscle memory is actually pre-delivery. But I have this memory of being very, very pregnant and how awkward it got to stand in front of a sink washing dishes. And I can feel like the side angle, like the side, you don't have abdominals anymore at that point. So you're sort of like torquing, you're twisting to move your belly out of the way to reach the dishes, reach the sponge. And then the associated muscle memory for me is after delivery, even as, you know, as many aches and pains, and I had C-sections and I had some pain. And of course, you're not like, you don't have your old body back, but you almost immediately can stand flush with your middle to the kitchen sink and wash dishes. And I just remember being like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Everything else feels hard, but this feels so much easier because I don't have this giant thing in the way.
What's funny about that is I'm just a few inches taller than you, but for me, I had to get pretty, like I had to be hugely pregnant before that was a problem. Because my belly was just a slight bit higher. And then suddenly there would come a day where it would, my belly would like, you know, drop.
Yes.
And I'd be like, oh, I guess someone else is doing the dishes. Yeah. Or you're standing way back and then you're getting all splashed because like water is going everywhere and your big pregnant belly is covered with water. Yeah.
That's so funny. I didn't think about the height thing. You are a few inches taller and your legs are also a lot longer. I also have a longer torso. So our belly height would be even a greater distance than just our overall height.
Yeah.
So you're like up over the sink or the whatever that's called, not the backsplash, the front splash part.
The front splash, the front thing of the sink. Yeah. The skirt, right? But the skirt of the sink?
Sure.
The front? Okay, sure. Let's go with that. Okay. Well, the next one, I have to give us both credit for coming up with this one because we came up with this one at the exact same time today. We were like independently like voxing back and forth about this topic. And then we both had this idea pretty much at the same time. And that is that feeling when you're nursing a baby and they fall asleep. And you want to put them down and you know, like they've kind of started to, they've clamped down, they didn't release. And you have to like stick your finger in their mouth and like push your nipple, like break the suction.
Yes,
and
break the suction.
Yeah. And push your nipple out. And sometimes a couple of my babies would not grind their teeth, but clench their jaws really hard when they fell asleep. Like right at the moment they fell asleep.
Oh my gosh.
There would be this moment where they would clamp down super hard and I had to get to them before that. So that became like an additional skill on top of that, like bloop, like the release skill. And it was like, my finger would sometimes be off, like at the ready when I started to see their eyes flutter because I knew it was like that sweet spot. I didn't want to do it too soon because then they wouldn't fall asleep or they'd wake up or be startled. But if I waited, it would be extremely painful. And then what do you do when like a baby's asleep, but like locked chewing and it hurts, but you can't react because you'll wake them up. So
I don't remember the clamping down as much, but sometimes I do remember the heaviness of their head. Like, let's say their head started to loll back, but they were asleep, but they were still latched. Like you'd feel the pull. So I just remember, there was a little corner of their mouth, like around their lower lip and tongue that if you just got in there with a tiny bit of air, you'd break that suction and then they would stay asleep, but you would not have your nipple stretched, you know, to the next room. So.
But then do you remember like the gross feeling of putting like your soggy nipple back in your bra? That's another feeling I'm glad I'm not experiencing anymore. It's just, ugh, no thanks.
Well, let's stay with this one, this theme just for a second, because I don't know that there's a no way for me to experience this next muscle memory ever again. And that is just the indescribable sensation of milk let down if you breastfed. Like I remember not having any idea what that would feel like. And then being like, oh, okay. Now I know what this feels like. And I also remember like years after I was done nursing, feeling like hearing a baby cry or feeling some other trigger or stimuli and thinking, oh no, my milk's going to let down. And then thinking, I don't have any milk. Like that's not possible. So maybe that's not a muscle memory as much as it is a memory of a physical sensation that I will never have again.
Well, I think for me, the muscle memory is, and I actually do sometimes still get, it's a phantom. I don't feel the feeling, but I feel the phantom feeling. And for me, the muscle memory is immediately clamping my forearms against my boobs to keep the milk from coming out. Like I did that for so long because otherwise I would leak and I got really good at it. I got good at using my baby sometimes. Like if I was holding a baby and my milk let down, I would like use the baby as a prop to smash and like apply pressure with. So like you could like groceries. I remember like leaning into my bag of groceries. So that I still will catch myself doing if I have that feeling. It doesn't happen as much, nearly as often as anymore as it used to. But every now and then, I actually, that happened last week where I had this random out of nowhere feeling like, not that I was going to feel it, but like I felt like I could feel it.
Yeah, that's okay.
No, I can't.
I was going to say that's amazing because it's been so many years, but I have a similar thing with like baby kicks inside you that I will have phantom ones of those and feel like what that felt like. It's not like I think I'm pregnant. There's no,
right.
But it is just it's the phantom physical sensation that's still there. And what would cue that? So interesting.
I don't know. Do you ever get, when you were pregnant, get round ligament pain, like the pain, like low in your belly, kind of like on either side? Mm-hmm. Every now and then I will just get a little stabby pull on one side or the other. It's usually if I'm like in yoga and I move, like I stand up really fast or something. And I'm sure it's just a ligament, but it always takes me right back where I'm like, it's like that memory of what that felt like when it actually was because my body was supporting a growing baby. Kind of crazy. Yeah.
All right. I think it is your turn.
Yes, it's my turn. Well, this one is super relatable to every mom. And that is the magical way, the magical athletic way you tense your body the moment before you release your arms when you're laying them down in the crib. So here you are, you're bent over a crib and hopefully you remember to let the side down before the baby fell asleep. Not like me, who always forgot. And so you don't have that far to go and you like lean over and lay them down. Now your lower back is in the game, right? Yes. Like hopefully you're using your knees. You're bending at the knees. You lay the baby down. You give it a second because you want baby to like almost like melt around your hands. Like when baby settles down and becomes heavy, that means your hands aren't what they're feeling anymore as the support under them. They feel the mattress. And then you slowly pull your hands out. And if you do it just right, you can do it pretty fast without waking the baby up. But if you screw up one thing, it's all over. And so you get so good at knowing your particular baby's like startle triggers or what it is that's going to like, is it going to be when that the fingers like go under their ribs? Like, what is the thing going to be that you need to do? Do you need to like get one hand all the way out and then put that hand on their belly while you pull the other hand out? Mm-hmm. Do you need to like do it both at once? So it's like pretty smooth. I mean, it's always different with every baby and it changes as they get older. It's like you're retraining yourself every single day, every single time you lay your baby down, you're training yourself a little bit to adapt to this particular version of your baby in this particular moment in time. And it's just a brain trip if you think about it.
It is a brain trip. It's like a Olympic level sport. I just took a whole memory lane with you right there, including like I remember I would do shushing like while I was doing that so that there was some kind of like other cue besides the physical movement that they were supposed to stay asleep. That's so funny. So funny. Okay, I'm going to skip forward slightly. And this one popped into my muscle memory, but only for my third kid, whom I wore a whole bunch in the Ergo carrier. And I wore her more often and longer than my other kids, just because she was the third. And so she was on my back a lot. And she was also on my front a lot. And I had the Ergo. So this is like older baby through toddler years. But there was a specific, I don't know if you remember with the Ergo, it's like the padded backpack strap.
Yeah.
And if I was going to wear her on my back, so I would put the waist part on and have that buckled. And I would get her out of the car because often we were going to go somewhere. And then she's little, right? She might be 18 months or two. So I've got to put her on my back and then get the straps up and over her and around me like a backpack. And I remember feeling so awkward about this in the beginning, even though I was an experienced mom, I hadn't done a lot of like back baby wearing and then feeling so confident in the movement later. It was like this moment where I was a little bit pitched forward. So she was like balancing on my back, like a little baby koala or baby monkey. And there's a moment of free fall. Like there's a moment where I almost have to let go of her to swing the rest of the Ergo around. And then there's just the coziest little buckling in where like, we're not going anywhere for a while. Like you are attached to me. And this is a very warm, fuzzy memory for me because she was my last. I was sort of savoring those baby years. And I had more reason and more motivation to keep wearing her longer because we were keeping up with bigger kids. We were doing Disneyland. We were doing we were just a more active family because I had older kids. So it's a muscle memory. And it's also a little bit like a last baby muscle memory for me that I loved.
Yeah, I love that. I had an Ergo, but I don't think I ever mastered the back wearing it.
It was great.
I remember other people helping me get into the Ergo with baby on my back. I think I only had it with Clara. So I definitely, there was times that I have photos of her on my back in the Ergo, but I don't know if I was ever able to master it on my own, or maybe I just forgot. But I definitely remember that feeling of in other ways of doing an awkward maneuver, getting a baby off your shoulders and here they come.
Yeah.
Here they come. They're coming. There's nothing I can do now. We're past the moment where we can reverse this action. And so you have to you have to react and catch them. And that's fun. Okay. I'm going to skip forward just a smidge to the toddler preschooler-ish years. And this is that awkward dance of trying to get a toddler or older into a shopping cart. Especially if you're pregnant while you're doing it. So basically when they're really little and if they're wearing boots or clunky, clunky sneakers,
or
forget about it.
Because then they fall off. Yeah. Or get caught. Yeah.
Right. So they can't, when they're little, they can't help you at all. They don't line up their feet with the holes and you're basically shoving them in. You have to use the momentum. If you're pregnant, this is already hard, but either way, it's not easy. You have to use the momentum to start getting them in. You're kind of going over with a heavy kid and you're trying to line up their legs. And sometimes they straighten their legs and that's no good. But sometimes they're just flop them all over the place. And that's even worse. So you somehow have to get the angle right and ease them in. When they're older, they start to help with the getting in part. I remember kind of almost sitting their bottom in with their legs splayed out and then going, okay, now tuck one leg and I'll kind of hold you and then we'll help you. I'll shift you and you can tuck the other. They do get better at helping, but they still get stuck on the way out. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to pull them out and they're banging their shins against the inside and their shoes are stuck. And it's just it's kind of one of those ones that's so frustrating because no matter how good you get at it, it's never perfect.
Well, and you don't want to yell. It's not like a moment where, not that yelling at our kids is ever the goal, but you'd feel bad yelling at a kid. In most cases, they're not purposely trying to make your life difficult. They just don't have the body awareness of what you need them to do to streamline this maneuver. So it's there's no one to be mad at, really. It's just And back to our height difference, I just remember feeling I didn't have the arm strength to get them as high as I needed to the bigger they got, if they were 3 or 4 years old, I needed to lift them all the way out to unstick those little feet from the holes. And I didn't have the height. I either didn't have the arm length or the arm strength. And so we were just locked in this very awkward dance.
I do remember taking boots and shoes off before I did the maneuver because that did make it a little bit easier. But, and certain kinds of pants were worse than other leggings on it. Leggings weren't great. They create a smooth and streamlined
in and out.
Sliding in and out. But bulky pants with a cuff or snow pants. I mean, I'm just shuddering thinking about it.
Well, and for us, I said, flip-flops just meant often the flip-flop would actually fall off just while they were riding in the cart. They just would lose shoes all the time because it was dangling. Okay, Megan. Well, over here at the Mom Hour, we are big fans of our sponsor, Our Place. In fact, you, me, and our team member, Katie, were all comparing notes on our favorite product. Katie was telling us that even though she's packing up to move her family to a new house, she cannot put that mini perfect pot from Our Place into the boxes yet because she's using it every night.
Well, as someone who also has a perfect pot, I got mine as part of their mini home cook duo set. I get it. It's nonstick, which is key, but it also has all these handy features like a steam release lid with a built-in strainer and this nice beechwood spoon that nests on the handle in this perfect little peg.
Okay, well, I didn't get this pot, but now I want it. That sounds so great. Our Place's cookware is great to cook with, beautiful to look at, and healthier for us as well. All of Our Place's products are made without PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. In addition to their cookware and tableware, Our Place is also making waves with their Wonder Oven, the most stylish all-in-one air fryer and toaster oven. Again, free from the forever chemicals found in many of those air fryers.
Listeners, our place offers a 100-day trial with free shipping and returns, and we've got a great deal for you. Go to fromourplace.com and enter the code MOMHOUR at checkout to receive 10% off site-wide. That's fromourplace.com, code MOMHOUR. Sarah, our sponsor Hiya Health makes a kid's daily multivitamin that parents can feel great about giving their kids because they have no added sugars or dyes. And our kids who have tried Hiya vitamins have loved them, which is important, right? Because what good is a bottle of vitamins that your kid won't take?
Hiya was founded by two dads who didn't like the ingredients label on some of the popular children's vitamins they were seeing on store shelves, so they got to work developing a formula that would help fill the most common nutrient gaps in modern kids' diets. Hiya's chewable kids vitamin is made with a blend of 12 organic fruits and vegetables and then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals. They're also vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free.
Hiya manufactures their vitamins right here in the USA with globally sourced ingredients, and then they ship their chewable vitamins directly to your door on a pediatrician-recommended schedule. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. You're going to get 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, go to hiyahealth.com/momhour. This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to hiyahealth.com/momhour and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
Okay, we're back and we're just going to keep on going. We are having so much fun, everyone. I hope you are having fun reliving this with us. Here's my muscle memory, Megan. And now I'm going a little bit backwards, back into the baby years. Picture a baby, an older baby, maybe a one-year-old, in a full body zip-up footed pajamas, and you're lifting them either out of the crib or maybe they've been sitting on the ground or in the high chair. And there is this sensation because what they're wearing is all one piece. There's nary a sock or a waistband or like a diaper sticking out. It's like one piece of pajama. And it always reminded me of like a toy, like a baby doll. And there was something, even in the thick of the trenches of motherhood years, I felt like this is my baby. Like it felt like a cartoon baby or like a toy. And something about those, we had a lot of the Carter's like fleecy zip up footed pajamas, and
was like a Muppet.
Yes. And the fact that it just, there was something that happened to their little body when you picked them up, because there was like gravity, their legs couldn't hang down really. The legs were being pulled up by the foot of the pajamas. Does that make sense? So it put them into this, like, as if you had poured baby into a baby shaped mold, which is why it felt like a toy. And I mean that in a really warm, fuzzy kind of way. And still, like, if you let me, if listener, if you have a baby that I could pick up who's like 9 months old and wearing those footy pajamas, I just would want it just for that sensation. And the clothing really made it somehow feel different.
So I have to share that my kids still got footy pajamas up until, I think like last year was maybe the year that I realized it's really hard to get matching footy pajamas for kids that range and have the age range that mine do.
24 years old. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So I didn't this year, but I will say that Clara still every now and then will wear like some of her old footy pajamas, and I will tell her to curl up next to me on the couch and tell her she feels like a stuffed animal. Like, I'm like, I just want to hug you like a stuffed animal. And I just like kind of squish her, because you're right, she's like uniform.
Yes.
Everywhere. Everything is like smooth and squishy.
Yes.
And everything is contained. It's like in my case, it's like a, you know, now a teenager, like a teenage stuffed animal, which is a little weird, but it is. I remember so well that sensation of them being little and the only thing sticking out that's skin are like clammy hands and cheeks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so funny.
It is the best.
It is. It is. Well, and the next one I have was actually the one that sparked this idea for me for this episode. So when we were talking with Joanna about potty training and all the, you know, indignities that can go along with that, and the mom muscle memory of like getting in front of things. This is like, that's the theme for this one. It's a sensation of trying to like pull down your toddler's pooped in pull up without getting the poop on their legs or your hands. Now that is like Olympic level, because you know, if they've got at all chubby legs, It's first of all, you have to get them to stand the right way. They have to stand slightly bow-legged, but not too bow-legged. And you can sometimes like rip the sides.
Yeah.
But that's playing a dangerous game because if you rip that side too quickly or you don't have your hand like under the poopy pull up,
really heavy.
Or the poop's really heavy, or it's like lopsided or like it shifts to one side, it might just fall out. So you have to really carefully pull it down. And same with underwear, like on a preschooler. Actually, we might have been talking about underwear because I remember us talking about like then you just kind of throw it away, right? So it's like that the leg holes aren't quite big enough to like navigate this without there being some casualties.
Right.
There's going to be a smear. You just don't know where it's going to be.
Oh my gosh, this is so funny. It's very, very specific. And yes, we laughed very hard about it that night. I just have to appreciate the fact that you and I got to leave that conversation and just think warm, fuzzy thoughts about muscle memory. And Joanna is actually still
potty trained. She had to go home that night and actually
and like deal with the poopy pull up. But we've paid our dues, I guess. Well, in the same vein of anticipating disaster just before it strikes, I just have this memory of how good I got at catching a very fast moving hand before it pulled my hair, grabbed my earring, knocked my water glass over. So now this baby, this imaginary baby is like, 8 to 14 months, something like that, like older baby approaching a year. And they get very interested in everything within reach. And you realize exactly how far their reach is and the things that they will go for most quickly. Like some of them love sunglasses and some of them love, I mean, I would never wear dangly earrings with a baby that age, but maybe I was dressed up for a rare date night or something. They're going to go for the thing, the shiniest object. And there's like this fat hand moving so quickly through the air and you get really good at just redirecting the hand. It's not like you're not like scolding them or anything. You're just like, oop, here,
just grab it. Like, and put it somewhere else.
Gonna put that hand somewhere else. So there you go.
The next one that I was thinking of that's kind of related is holding a, well, and this is another one where it changes a lot as they get older. So basically bathing a baby is like wildly different from say a 3-month-old to a 6-month-old to a 9-month-old. Like at one stage, they're just kind of like laying there and maybe you have them in a, like a little plastic tub. And as long as you have a hand under them and you know, whatever, like it's, they're not putting up that much of a fuss. The next thing you know, they're sitting, but like flopping over, like you have to hold them up because they're not that steady. And the tub makes it easy for them to kind of flop around.
Right.
But you still have to wash them. And then you have to get them in and out. Like there's so much happening, so much like slipperiness and squirminess. And like, you have to have all the stuff where you need it. And you have to be able to like hold them with one hand and do the other stuff with the other hand and rinse with one hand. And then they get older and it's that either holding them by the wrist or because they keep trying to stand up. So it's like you're holding them by the wrist or the arm or the shoulder or something. And you don't want to pull them. Like it's that delicate, I don't want to damage you, baby. And yet I really need you to just do this thing, please, because I can't keep you in the tub otherwise. And I'm trying to wash you and get you out of here, especially if you had a baby who didn't like being in the tub or a toddler who wanted out. I mean, it's kind of making me sweat.
I feel slightly anxious too when you are describing this, and it's making me have so much empathy for the moms who just feel so physically zapped by the end of the day. And then you think, well, I didn't work out and like I slept okay last night. And like, I didn't, you know, nobody, like I didn't get run over by a train exactly, but the physicality of certain stages of motherhood. And you just described one that's like, it's physically kind of challenging and it's also mentally exhausting. So yes. Well then I shall do mine that is also related to wet babies and toddlers. I am not sure exactly what this muscle memory is. It's more of a sense memory. I'm going to call it a sense memory because my kids were all babies in Arizona. And so we did a lot of outdoor water things in the summer, or really more likely in the spring and fall, because the summer is just too dang hot. You just were in swim diapers and swimsuits and rash guards a lot of the time, whether it was a splash pad, a little like kiddie pool, your own backyard water table. And there is a wet toddler, kind of like how there's a wet puppy sense wet toddlers have a sense. Like they don't have any, just like the grocery cart example, they are not yet informed about how their wet body operates any differently than a dry body. So mm-hmm. they're a constant risk for slipping. They are constantly like moving their wet body, dripping on places. And then I just remember the peeling off of my kids all wore rash guards, boy or girl kid, because we needed the most sun protection. So we had a lot of the long sleeve rash guards or a rash guard swimsuit, and the peeling off of those arms of a rash guard that would like get stretched out. And then the peeling off of a swim diaper or the ripping the sides of a swim diaper. So it's just an overall experience. And yet we went through all that almost every day because what else were we going to do? It was hot out and the kids loved the water. And then you add the smell of sunscreen to that and like how sticky they are. It's hard to get them dressed afterwards. It's like it's basically everything we know about getting bigger kids changed after a swim, only with zero help, because toddlers, again, they have no way to know how to help you help them get dry after being wet. So that one was a little amorphous, but I spent so many years of my life in that wet toddler phase.
Well, I didn't even have this on my list, but when you were talking about this, it reminded me of like the flip side of that, the seasonal flip side, the climate flip side, and that is getting a toddler into a snowsuit and boots and mittens. There's like a very specific kind of order of operations that has to happen. Your sleeve doesn't get caught up in their, like their sweater or shirt sleeve doesn't get caught up in their coat sleeve. So you have to hold it while you're pulling it down. You might want to put their mittens on first so that the coat, arms go over the mittens and hold them in place. And these are all things that it's not even like you could go in with a checklist and know this like right from the get-go, because there's going to be kids for whom that's not needed, or like sizes of kids for whom that's not needed, or times of year or activities where for whatever reason, like you don't actually have to do that. And then you have this one kid who you know is going to be the one who freaks out if snow touches their wrist. Right. So you better make sure like it's completely covered. And so you have to learn, like my point, I guess, is that you don't even always know in going in exactly what you have to do to get ahead of some of these things. You have to learn them in real time with your specific kid suited to the specific circumstance that you're in. And it constantly changes.
It constantly changes, and you don't get any credit for these skills you are learning. That's what I tried to say in the opening is like, nobody talks about how good you get at removing a pull-up without dumping poop on the floor. Like that is not a skill that goes anywhere, but it should be. It should be recognized. Should be.
I agree.
Okay. Well, here's another kind of sweet one. And this was more became like a ritual for me that I just had a muscle memory of. But I realized years and years after I had been doing it, that every single time I lifted a kid out of a car seat buckle. So from the very beginning, from infant seats all the way to, 4 years old, probably in a 5-point harness. And when I would get them out of the car, I would kiss them on the cheek as I got them out every single time, like to the extent that it was one motion, like unbuckle, do the chest clip, help them get their arms out, put my hands under their little armpits. And then as I sort of like pulled their body out of the car seat, I would kiss them on the cheek closest to me in the car. Mm-hmm. And I have caught myself doing it with my nieces or any other, child whom I am allowed to get in and out of a car. And I don't know, who knows the first time I did that, but I never, ever didn't do it. So
I love that. I actually was at a grocery store a couple weeks ago and saw a mom pushing her baby in a maybe not a really little baby, but maybe like a 9-month-old baby in the cart facing her. And she was kind of bent over and talking and she kept kissing the baby on the forehead. And I was like, oh my gosh, I did the exact same thing. Aww. Like pushing, and it would make your trip down the aisle extremely jerky because you'd push a little bit and then you'd stop and kiss the baby. And then you'd push a little bit and then you'd stop and kiss. And I just remember doing that. And like, it was like we were in our own little world.
Yeah.
That really, like, we'd really kind of tune everybody else out. And it was really sweet to see.
Really sweet. Well, I mean, on that exact same note with Violet, when she was older, she was my grocery store sidekick forever. She was probably three and four in the grocery cart. And we'd play a game where she'd kiss me and then I'd push the cart really fast as if by giving me a kiss, it like gave us the zoomies. So we would just play that game through. But she was older, like preschool there. So it's all these universal things we do.
Well, here's another one that's maybe more for slightly older kids. And Sarah, I want you to put yourself back in this place because it's like you have to kind of think about it. Put yourself here. So say you are at one of your older kids' like school performances.
Okay.
And you're holding whichever the preschooler was in your lap at the time. And there's like a tense softness in your arms. That's mm-hmm. the only way I can describe it. Your arms are around the little one. Mm-hmm. And you're holding them firmly in place, but loosely mm-hmm. so that they don't feel like you're smashing them. It's like a loose tenseness. Mm-hmm. It's the only way I can describe it. But it's also fluid because if at any moment they jerk, like they're going to jump down off your lap or something,
yeah.
you have to be ready. Now, you might actually let them scoot down and put their feet on the ground and stand up, but your hands aren't going to move.
Right.
And now you're on alert. Like now you know that at any moment they could go on like a duck under your arms. They could bolt. I know you have a bolter. Yes. So it's like everything you're doing. And you might be carrying on a conversation with the mom next to you. You might be watching intently. You might even be doing this with one hand while you film or take pictures of the performance. Like all of these things could be happening with multiple other stimuli and activities happening, but your whatever arm is on your little kid
yes.
never forgets to do its job.
Yes. It's like your body has created the invisible fence for them or like the, you know, like the boundary. And you're right. You don't have to be holding them tight the whole time, but the message is clear. As you were talking, I was imagining I had this muscle memory is not of the mom. It's the kid muscle. You know, when they do that thing to slide off your lap where they slightly arch their lower back. So they're going to go from like seated to like slide off your back,
yes.
like in one little movement. And the little stinkers can do that really fast. Like they're sitting on your lap and all of a sudden they're not because they've done this little hip maneuver and all of a sudden they're off.
Yeah.
Well, this one just happened this morning and this brought back a muscle memory that I didn't even remember was a thing, but I was just this morning, Reed is almost 12. He was eating breakfast and we have bar stools at the kitchen counter. And I was walking behind him and I don't know why I did this, but I thought I needed to scoot him in like a little kid, like you would help them scoot closer. And then I was like, oh wait, he weighs over 100 pounds. Like he knows how to scoot his own chair, but it reminded me of constantly helping preschoolers, like again, who don't know how to sit in chairs, don't know how to sit up to the table and always like going behind a chair. And like, you kind of want the kid to help you, like help you help me. I'm going to scoot you in and you don't want to pinch their fingers against the edge of the table. And so that was just kind of funny this morning that I was like, wait, I don't have to scoot anybody in anymore, but clearly I'm ready if needed.
If needed. Yeah. Well, Sarah, I'm going to wrap up my list with, I guess one that's not exactly a specific incident type of muscle memory, but almost like a category. So early on, you mentioned the quick staving off disaster, mm-hmm. you know, baby's about to hook their finger in your hoop earring. You block that hand, like, you know, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. And there's something else that sort of is in that same category, where it's like, you want to interact with your toddler, but they're sticky. Mm-hmm. Like their cheeks are really sticky or their hands are really sticky or like there's something about them that is distasteful at the moment and you just don't want to touch it. So you actually learn how to cuddle your toddler without touching the offensive parts of their body.
Yeah.
I remember grabbing like by the wrist and like turning them around and coming behind with like for a big bear hug squeeze. And I'd kiss the top of their head, but I wanted their faces like nowhere near me at that moment.
Yeah.
You come up with all of these like maneuvers to get around being touched by the stickies.
I love it so much. It's so true. And how often are they sticky and undesirable? Almost always. Yeah. Or you don't know where their hands have been. So you're like,
right.
Oh.
Or that, right. I'm thinking like, yeah, in a park where like maybe they've had something to eat and then they went and put their hands in the dirt. And it's not like I'm not a germaphobe and
no.
I'm not dirt averse, but I just don't necessarily want it all over my face
right.
or my clothes while we're out. So I'm just like, okay, let's I've got these wipes in my purse. I just have to kind of swing you around and hold you with one arm. I love you. I love you. I love you. But I need to wipe you down.
Right. You will be wiped down at this moment. I love it. Well, this was so, so fun. And again, shout out to Joanna over a glass of wine and potty training stories. This episode idea was launched.
Yeah. Love it. Well, just a reminder too that our sponsor, AutoApprove, makes it really easy to save money on your car loan. And if you refinance with AutoApprove, they'll send you $100. Find out how much you could save on your monthly car payment and get your free quote at autoapprove.com/momhour. And we'll link that up in the show notes too.
Yeah, definitely go check that out. And excited about this. Coming up on Friday, we have one of our Voices episodes. Megan, you are chatting with our good friend Amy Clark of the Book Gang podcast. And you're talking about creating and cultivating a reading life as a mom, right?
Yeah, it's a great conversation. And we've got some hacks that might kind of help you restructure your life a little bit to make more time for reading. And also just some encouragement if you're not in a reading season about how to kind of get back into some books.
I love that. And on the blog this week, we have a really great post from our contributor, Jennifer, about water safety for coming up this summer. She has been a swim instructor for a long, long time and knows a ton about keeping kids safe around water. So that is up on the blog, and we will link that up in the show notes as well. So that's it from us. Megan, this was fun. We'll talk to everybody soon.
Talk to you soon. The Mom Hour is supported by partners like Erica. Erica is the social media health app for teens that gives them the tools to unplug when they need to for improved health, study focus, sleep, and daily balance.
Erica was built by a dad of three boys who saw that teens themselves were really becoming self-aware to the risks of social media, and he wanted to help them self-regulate. Erica works to hide distracting apps from your phone at the touch of a button, keeping them out of sight and out of mind without deleting your data.
Tell your teens about Erica and save 20% on the Erica family plan with promo code THEMOMHOUR. Go to erica.app and search for plans. That's Erica with a K, Erika.app, and use code THEMOMHOUR to save 20%. Sarah, I have been having just the best time making my new podcast, The Tea's Made. I launched back in November, and so far I've covered topics like staying warm on cold winter walks, nurturing creativity, how to be a great host, and even Nordic secrets to loving winter.
Well, you know I am fan number one of The Tea's Made. It's got such a cozy vibe, and it seems like you've really hit your stride in covering topics like wellness, self-care, comforting rituals and routines, and home and family life.
Just look for The Tea's Made with Megan Francis wherever you get your podcasts, or head to theteasmade.com to find all the episodes.